This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 279.
This podcast is brought to you by thenewknee.shop.com. Don't let knee pain slow you down or sideline you altogether. Let the latest running innovation, the new knee, help you get back on track. It is designed specifically to relieve dreaded runner's knee pain so that you can get back to running pain-free. Check it out at newknee.shop.com. That's N-U-N-E-E-shop.com. And use the code MTA20 for a 20% discount. That's newknee.shop.com and use the code MTA20. And we're also really excited to have another running shoe company sponsor the podcast. It's a Swiss-made shoe called On. Actually, Angie, I first saw these when I was over in Switzerland last year to run the Jungfrau Marathon.
That's right. On is taking the running scene by storm as the fastest-growing running brand in the world. It's based around the radical idea of zero-gravity running. On has clean and minimalistic designs, as well as its sole technology, which gives you the sensation of running on clouds.
So you can try a pair of Ons for yourself for 30 days and put them in the test, which means you can actually run in them before you decide to keep them. Just go to on-running.com/MTA. That's on-running.com/MTA. And finally, we'd like to thank BioLite. It's great to have a headlamp company sponsor the podcast because, you know, from time to time you got to run at night. And I've never really fallen in love with a headlamp, you know, prior to this. So guys, definitely go over and check out BioLite. They make the rechargeable headlamp 330, an ultra thin, super bright, no bounce headlamp that is comfortable. So comfortable, you'll actually forget that you're wearing it. So head over to BioLiteEnergy.com/MTA. And of course, you can get 15% off for being a listener to this podcast. Just use the code MTA at checkout. That's BioLite, which is spelled L-I-T-E, energy.com/MTA. And use the code MTA at checkout for 15% off. Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you and inspiring you to go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we speak with Ryan Hall, two-time Olympian, American record holder, and author of the new book, Run the Mile You're In. And in the quick tips segment, we answer a listener question about how to deal with chafing. And of course, you can get more help taking your running to the next level inside the academy. Find out how to join when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. And you can also learn about working with one of our coaches over there as well. By the way, welcome to Coach Nicole to the team. That makes 9 coaches on the team now, Angie.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have Nicole Hart as our newest coach. She's a very accomplished runner and
registered nurse.
Yep, and sports trainer. So she's going to be a great addition to help people accomplish their running goals.
Okay, so by way of chit-chat, Angie, there are some rule changes to the Olympic qualifying system that some people are not too happy about, sounds like, huh?
Yeah, that's right. The IAAF, which is kind of the governing body, has made some changes in advance of the 2020 Tokyo Games, making it tougher to qualify. Under the new qualification process, an athlete can qualify for the 2020 Olympics by running within the entry standard or by using their IAAF world ranking position in their selected event. So it's kind of like 50% based on the entry standard and having that, and 50% based on ranking, you know, within like the top 10 in these certain events.
So it's not going to just come down to the Olympic qualifying race and how you finish at that one race.
Yeah, the United States has been a little bit unusual in their qualifying for the marathon, in that it was all based on the Olympic trials qualifier marathon, and they would take the top 3 men and the top 3 women automatically to the Olympic Games.
But if you have a bad day at that race, which happens.
That's right. So the new standards are kind of like an insurance policy for maybe someone who's been out of action due to an injury or pregnancy, or for someone who's up and coming in the marathon. And yeah, like you said, if it was just a really bad day during the Olympic trials, it kind of helps even the playing field. But it's definitely going to increase the drama for the Olympic trials here in the United States, because the next trials is going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a hilly course, and it could potentially be very hot and humid on that day. And so it's very possible that an athlete could finish in the top 3 but not have the qualifying time for the Olympic standard. So for men, their qualifying time is 2:11:30. For women, it's 2:29:30. So for an example, that's a time that only one American, Galen Rupp, has surpassed in the last 2 years. And so like with the last Olympic trials in 2016, Meb Keflezighi finished second at the trials in Los Angeles in 2:12:21. So he wouldn't have made the Olympic standard at that race.
Well, are we just not going to send anybody to the Olympics now or what?
No, but it means the Olympic trials marathon is not going to mean as much in terms of,
yeah, I see.
You know, it's going to be kind of like 50% based on that. So someone could potentially win the Olympic trials marathon and still not go to the Olympics if they don't have a qualifying time. So people are saying that is a problem because all these changes were just sprung on everyone. You know, it's mid-March going into April here. And the next Olympic qualifiers has already been set for Atlanta. And probably they would have chose a different course if they, you know, people would have known about this in advance. It also means that probably more American runners will be doing fall marathons, such as Chicago, New York City, to try to get a top 10 finish and hit the standard, whereas they might not because the Olympic trials are coming up in February of 2020. So it's definitely going to mean that a lot of elite runners are going to be changing their strategy. Hopefully it'll end up that it's more of a fair system for everyone, but you know, change is hard, so it's going to be some adjustment for everyone.
And speaking of the World Marathon Majors, we are going to be at the London Marathon. We're having a meetup if you want to join us. We have an event for that set up over on Facebook, or if you're not on Facebook, head over to our website, shoot us an email, and I will send you the details of that meetup. We're going to meet for a proper English tea the day before the race. So yeah, be a lot of fun. And of course, we are running in support of the John Muir Trust. So here's our quote from John Muir, naturalist, conservationist. He said, "God never made an ugly landscape. All that the sun shines on is beautiful, so long as it is wild."
Very nice.
The John Muir Trust, of course, is making efforts to preserve and conserve wild lands in the UK, like in Scotland. And if you want to help us plant 262 trees for the John Muir Trust, thank you for everyone that's given. We're about 30% of the way there. Head over to johnmuirtrust.org/MTA. Only costs £10 to plant one tree. Well, we are excited about this episode. We're going to talk to Ryan Hall. Second time we've had him on the podcast. And actually, after the fact, I went ahead and signed up for Ryan and Sarah Hall's guided trip to the Jerusalem Marathon next year.
Wow. What is that going to entail?
I don't know completely. You know, I haven't even paid for the whole trip yet.
So it's not totally confirmed yet.
Not totally confirmed, but
it'll be a combination of touring and running the Jerusalem Marathon.
Yep, and kind of a running clinic for, you know, 8 or 9 days.
Awesome.
So yeah, excited about that. It'll be my first time in the country and getting to run the Jerusalem Marathon after I've heard so many good things about it. I'm really excited. It's going to kick my butt, though. The hills are gnarly. All right, so a lot of exciting stuff going on out there in MTA land. Angie wants to read some shout-outs before we jump into our conversation with Ryan.
That's right. We'd like to say congratulations to Academy member Alicia. She just ran her first marathon at the LA Marathon. And this note comes from Carolyn. She says, "This time last year, I was barely able to walk on my own from severe left knee pain. During a very long and painful recovery from stress fractures in my knee, patellar tendonitis, and IT band issues, I ate my heart watching my friends running race after race while I sat on the sidelines volunteering and cheering them on while trying to stay positive. Meanwhile, I was experiencing bouts of depression over my injuries, wondering if I'd ever recover and get back in the game. Finally, after months of rehabilitation, I eventually began running, taking baby steps, and regaining strength. I entered the New York City Half Marathon, which was my first half marathon ever. My injury wouldn't let me train like I wanted to, but this past Sunday I ran the race with everything I had, and it was absolutely magical. In the end, I was in absolute disbelief when I crossed the finish line and became unexpectedly emotional from the experience. And of course, as soon as I was done, I did what many of us do, to look for my next race."
Well, thank you for that note, Carolyn, and congrats on having the patience to get through the injury and staying engaged in the running community, you know, during that time and fighting your way back into half marathon shape.
This note comes from Racine. She says, "I finished my first marathon at the beautiful Tomoka Marathon in Ormond Beach, Florida. It was an emotional finish as my mom passed away just about a month ago, and my dad came out to watch and meet me at the finish line. I had been debating dropping down to the half since I had missed a week of running, but everyone in my family told me to keep at it even when I really didn't feel like it. I will say, running and listening to the MTA podcast, especially episode 262, kept me sane during a really hard time. I had been following the MTA beginner training plan, and even though I missed the 20-mile run, the longest I did was 18, I still felt strong in those final miles and finished in 5 hours and 35 minutes. I highly recommend this race, and I can't wait to sign up for my next one.
Well, see that? You can miss a 20-miler, and it's not the end of the world.
That's right. It's rare that your training cycle is going to go 100% according to plan. Despite our best efforts, life happens, and you know, she obviously went through a really tough time with her family, but, you know, it sounds like she made the right decision of sticking with it, even with imperfect training, and it really paid off on a great marathon finish. And this comes from Manissa. She says, "Hey, MTA gang, I'm happy to report that with the help of MTA coach Athena, I ran an unexpected PR today at the Amstelveen Half Marathon with an official time of 1 hour and 56 minutes and negative splits. And thanks so much to Coach Athena for laying out the training plan for me and getting me here. Signing up for coaching has been one of the best decisions I've ever made, and this is only the beginning. I'm so excited to see what comes next."
All right. Great to hear about her success at the half marathon and the negative split. And of course, that is a race in the Netherlands. I always love hearing, you know, where people are and the races that they're doing. Some of these races I've never heard of before. So I go, you know, Google them and say, oh, I'd like to run that.
Add another one to the list.
All right. Well, here's our conversation with Ryan Hall. He holds the U.S. record in the half marathon when he ran 59:43, becoming the first American to break the one-hour barrier. He placed 10th at the Olympic Marathon of Beijing, and he's also the only American to run sub-2:05 in a marathon, which he did at Boston. His wife, Sarah Hall, is also an elite runner, and they have 4 adopted daughters from Ethiopia. And in this conversation, you'll hear about what it means to run the mile you're in. We'll also talk about identity and the ability to not take your failures personally, how the African runners that Ryan has trained with process failure differently. We'll also talk about the concept of goals of the heart and the comparison trap, dealing with pain, body image, and more. And just to set up the interview for you guys, we talked to Ryan via Skype, and apparently he doesn't have good internet at his house. They live out in the sticks in Flagstaff, Arizona. So Ryan was in his car down the road, hotspotting off his phone. So the connection wasn't great. And then later, when the call got dropped, he went home and we called him on his landline, which wasn't that much better. So apologize for some of the audio issues if you hear that. That's what's going on. Otherwise, it's a great conversation. And Ryan's a very inspiring person to talk to. So here's our conversation with Ryan Hall. Well on my way, well on my way. All right, we're on the podcast now with Ryan Hall. Ryan, welcome back to the MTA podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So we're in our podcast studio, and you're in your podcast studio, right?
Yep, in my office. I tell people I'm a chauffeur more than anything now that I have 4 daughters. I spend a lot of time in the car.
Yeah, I have 3 sons, and I feel like it's dad's taxi service.
I know, you need to start charging.
Well, we appreciate getting a copy of the book, Run the Mile You're In. Let's start with this. What does it mean to run the mile you're in?
Yeah, so Run the Mile You're In is a mantra that I would repeat to myself often on the starting line of marathons. I always tell people, like, the starting line of marathons would often be my least favorite place to be, just because the road ahead seems so long and so hard and it's so daunting. You're just thinking to yourself, like, how am I going to run under 450 per mile 26 times in a row, you know? Because even though you prepared for it and done some big workouts, you still have not done anything close to that in practice. And yet here you go, you're gonna go after it.
That's why I don't run 450 per mile.
One of the many reasons.
You run 4:45, right? So yeah, this is something I just repeat to myself, because I find that, you know, if I'm looking for grace for mile 23, but I'm in mile 1, I'm not gonna find it. Like, it's gonna overwhelm me, it's gonna put me in a state of despair, and then I'm gonna collapse. Whereas if I focus on, like, there's enough grace for this mile, for this moment, and I'm just gonna do a great job with the mile that I'm in right now. And so it's just like a big kind of theme theme throughout my career of how to push myself, how to get the most out of myself when I'm on the starting line of marathons.
And could it, if you broaden that, could also be, you know, metaphorically the mile of life that you're in, the season of life, because a lot of times we're always putting our happiness into the future and thinking, if I just have this or accomplish that, I'll be finally happy, and I got to work until I get to this point of arrival.
Absolutely. And I think people are starting to realize that's not a healthy place to live in. You know, as like people are talking about being present and being in the day you're in and being fully like alive in the moment. I think these are all things that are getting more popular, because I think people are tasting the fruits of thinking down the road and being discontent with where you're at. It's just not a fun way to, at least for me, it's not a fun way to go through life.
And like you said, if you're at mile one or two and you're trying to think ahead to after mile 20, for one thing, the marathon can throw so much at you. You just have no idea what you're going to be feeling like then. So there's no sense in borrowing trouble from future miles. Now, in your marathons, I mean, you really like to be up front and push the pace. That was just kind of your race strategy, your mentality was, you know, give it your all in every single mile. And sometimes that, you know, went really well for you, obviously. And sometimes it didn't. But I think you really embodied that. And it kind of came through in your book really well, that you really did try to run that mile and give it your all. But I think people can really, really get something out of that.
Yeah, That kind of comes back to what I wrote about in the book, the chapter kind of on identity. Because when you, or at least for me, like I have a hard time taking risk if there is so much on the line that I can't handle if it doesn't play out well, you know, like if I fail. So, for example, previous to, I'd say, being at Stanford, because really the big shift happened for me my sophomore year at Stanford when I dropped out of school, ended up coming back. And that's when kind of God started dealing with this identity of like, how do you see yourself? Like, why are you important? What is it that makes you of worth? Because before that, it was all just like my performances. How fast was I running? How well was I doing in the classroom? How did I stack up to everyone else? Like, that's what I saw that made me special. But after coming back, after going through the depression at Stanford and leaving, come back, that's when God started to show me how he sees me. And that is one of the most powerful things I think anyone can experience, is when you see yourself through the loving eyes of the Father, who you're made in his image. That will change you. And that gives you a foundation that allows you to take those risks, go to the front, push. Because you know what? Like, if I blow up, it's a bummer. It's not a fun experience. I didn't enjoy those moments. I would get disappointed. But at the end of the day, like, it didn't affect how I saw myself anymore. And so that just allowed me to get back up, not take my failures personally, which is something I think the Africans are really, really good at. When I see the guys after the Boston Marathon, New York City Marathon, any of these major marathons, the African guys, I can't tell like who ran well and who didn't, because they don't wear it on their face, you know, like they're all happy and smiling and chatting, like, so you have no idea. Whereas you look at the American guys, it's all over them, like, and myself included, I was the same way sometimes, you know, where you could tell like that guy had a really bad race, you know, it's all over your face. So I think it's that shift of like being like, I'm failure is something that happens to me, but it's not who I am, is really, really powerful. And being willing to take risk and try to do things that you're not sure if you can do it or not. And, you know, as you mentioned, sometimes I could do it and sometimes I couldn't and I blew up, but I was okay with the result either way it would go. And I always felt like taking that big risk was worth the reward of having it finally click and hit.
That's really interesting. I never heard that comparison between the American runners and the African runners. What's going on there? What makes the difference between the two?
To be honest, I think it's culture. I don't know what, you know, how they cultivate it in their culture, but like in you sense it in training, because I've, you know, trained in Kenya and Ethiopia. I've trained with a lot of these guys, and there's just like something about like them and their willingness to try and fail at things. And maybe it's just because they experience failure so much in training that by the time they get to the race, if they experience it in the race, it's it's nothing new, you know, because the training groups are so loaded up, so talented that, you know, you're going to get dropped some days and you're going to like blow up some days and you're going to try and do things that you shouldn't be trying to do because that's just the environment. That's the culture of the group. Whereas I'd say in the U.S., we tend to be much more calculated and, you know, we're trying to progressively build workouts, which is great, you know, but I think there's also a time and space for being like, you know what, let's just throw all that out the window and let's just go run as hard as we can and see what happens.
Do you think also that Western culture tends to be more individually minded, whereas some of those other countries, you know, it's more about the group. And, you know, you see a lot of the African marathoners and they're taking their winnings and they're going and, you know, building houses for all their extended family and really aiding the towns and villages that they came from.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an excellent point and something that is very different between our two cultures that I think, yeah, you're absolutely right with that.
Anything else that you learned from training over there in Ethiopia? You guys trained at pretty high altitude, like 9,000 feet, right?
Yeah, so Ethiopia is 9,000. Kenya is a little bit lower at like 7,000. The willingness to take risks, not only in racing but also in training, like the level that they train at, most of us would be afraid to train that level because we're afraid of getting hurt, which is a legitimate fear. Like a lot of those guys end up hurt and never make it, you know. So
like in terms of volume of miles or
volume and intensity, like for example, I worked with Coach Canova briefly towards the tail end of my career, and he had me doing like double hard, and he coaches like a lot of the Kenyan athletes. That's one I'm using him as an example. Mm-hmm. But he'd have me doing like double hard days where I'm doing like hard tempo in the morning and coming back and doing some hard like 800 meter repeats in the afternoon, and then the next day is like a medium hard run, and it didn't work for me. So I wouldn't say that necessarily everyone should, you know, train how they train. I'd actually be more curious to see how they would do under like a Western style of training. But I think the mentality they have is just really a good one of like, and I see this with my daughter Hannah when she's training. She's just like aggressive. Like she doesn't really know pace, so she just starts like as fast as she can every time, you know. and she's learning and like needs to find a healthier balance with that and learn pace. But I like that mentality that like she's willing to be aggressive and run hard and find out where her lines are.
So in the book, you talk about goals of the heart. I thought this was a great concept. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, so when I grew up, with not having goals of the heart. I came from the complete opposite end of the spectrum where my dad and I wrote about this in the book. This was actually a positive experience, but we would pour cement in our backyard every summer and we'd write down what goals we wanted to go after. And what was powerful about that was like the intent and the commitment to going after a goal and being accountable to someone else. I think that's a really great principle that I'm really thankful that I had that experience as a kid. But after I was so caught up on times. So I'd be writing like the times I wanted to run for the mile all over my textbook. Like I remember I'd set clocks at our house that were dead, like to the time I wanted to run for the mile. Like I was just like obsessive about hitting these performance times, you know, and that went on all the way kind of until like I had that identity shift at Stanford and started seeing myself more how God was seeing me, some of my performances. So should I be judging myself based on my performances? And the answer to that was like, no. So what goals should I have then? And Jesus is, you know, who I follow and who I subscribe to, you know, and he was all about like, let's address what's going on in your heart, because out of the heart flows your actions, flows everything. So that's kind of when I started, stopped writing time goals down, stopped writing days till the Olympics charts down, and started focusing on like, what can I accomplish every time that is success in terms of like how I define success? And that's something that I can accomplish every single time I'm on the starting line. Because the thing that's frustrating about running, I think all runners can relate to this, is you just don't have that much control over the result. Like we like to think that we do, but like sometimes I did everything right, trained perfectly, ate as perfectly as I knew how to eat, slept as much as I could possibly sleep, like did everything right, and it still didn't go according to schedule, you know? So that can be like a very, very frustrating experience, and one that kind of would help me get to this point, being like, well, what goal can I have that I can achieve every time? And also one that's going to be powerful, that's going to change how I perform externally. And so I came back to having these goals of the heart. And so what I do is just like choose a different goal that I wanted to go after with each race. And maybe you know, the goal is thankfulness. And so every single time I look at my watch, I'm checking my mile splits, I'm going to be thankful for whatever it is. You know, like that is the goal of the race. Today. Other times, maybe it's loving other people, or maybe it's running with boldness and taking a risk, or patience. That could be a good one for me because I'm not naturally good at that. But I just really like staying on the starting line and knowing for sure that I had complete control over whether or not I accomplished this goal.
Yeah, I like that because we've had lots of guests and we've done lots of episodes that talk about the how-tos of training, the nuts and bolts. But to talk about the heart and how we control that and nurture that, that's something that we haven't talked about a whole lot on the show. And the book lays it out really well in many chapters. Maybe we'll take just a couple points from that, like handling failure that can be hard on the heart if things don't go as one hopes. So maybe you can speak to, like, what did you learn about handling failure as a professional athlete?
Yeah, a couple things. I remember coming back from a race and like this sports radio was on and there was a sports psychologist on there. And he was talking about having to develop instant sports amnesia to your failures. So just like literally like forgetting that it even happened, you know? And I was just like, wow, that's like super powerful. And also like right in line with my beliefs in the Bible when it talks about forgetting everything that was behind and striving towards what's ahead and pressing on towards the goal. So it's like this concept of like forgetting your failures and continuing to move forward that was really super helpful for me. For example, in the book, I wrote about experiencing one of my biggest failures in my career a month before the biggest breakthrough in my career. And I'm talking about the New York City half marathon, which was a month before the Boston Marathon when I ran 204. But like people forget that like, I ran almost, I don't even know what my time was to this day. I couldn't tell you. I think it was 65 something or other. That, but that was far from, you know, my best performance and far from where I thought I was supposed to be at. But what helped me get through that really, you know, because I was expecting to run well, my training had gone well, I wasn't sick, like I had zero excuses. And sometimes that's the hardest failure to take is when like you can't identify one thing that went wrong, but for whatever reason, like it was all wrong. And so I remember I was walking back from the finish line. I walked like 5 miles back through the streets of New York to our hotel, just trying to like wrap my head around what just happened. And to be honest, like I never did. Like going internal did not help me. It just, everything just kind of stayed inside me. But what did help me was getting back up the next morning, going for a run and like, just being like, I got to develop instant sports amnesia towards this and think about what I'm going after. And that's Boston. So as I did that and I started moving forward again, that's really when things shifted in my emotions, in my mind, and then also even in my body physically, that was manifested. I just, you know, training had been going well before that, but after that race, training just took off through the roof and I started feeling amazing like every single day. And that was just because I just got back up and kept moving forward. And you know, how you get back up goes back to what we've kind of chatted a little bit about already with this sense of identity and knowing who you are, knowing what makes you special. One of my favorite Bible verses that I relied on all the time throughout my career because I had so many failures along the way was this verse that says, though a righteous man falls 7 times, he rises again. And I would ponder that verse so often because I'm like, how do you keep getting back up? And you're like, it's so hard every time you get knocked down. And as I was kind of like thinking about it and praying through it with God, I felt like he was telling me, it's because this righteous person believes that they're righteous. That's what allows them to get back up. Like they're not perfect. They're falling over and over and over again, which doesn't sound like the description of righteous person. But I think the verse is really talking about like it's this identity of seeing yourself as righteous that allows you to get back up from your failures. So that's been my journey, you know, like really trying to continue moving forward, but keep moving forward from knowing who I am and what makes me special and how God sees me.
Well, I hope you have enjoyed the conversation this far. We'd like to take a quick break and thank our episode sponsor, New Knee. So for all you out there suffering with knee pain, runner's knee, and so forth, you definitely need to check out New Knee. It's a innovative product created by a fellow runner and two-time Ironman named Mike Emmerling, who struggled himself with runner's knee and was unable to get relief from all the other braces and wraps and stuff out there, so he came up with his own solution.
New Knee's unique design relieves the pressure that each stride places on your kneecap, and the research reveals that if you relieve the pressure, you'll relieve the pain. We've heard from a lot of people in our listening audience who have used New Knee with great success.
And this is not a huge company, you know, and Mike is a very approachable guy. A lot of his customers reach out to him and tell him about the success they've had with it. He says there was a guy named Joe, a retired army officer, struggled with runner's knee pain while he was deployed, wasn't able to run, and he wanted to return home and enjoy running again after deployment. So he got the New Knee, and on the first day of spring, he sent Mike a picture of himself enjoying a 5-mile run while pushing his baby girls in a stroller.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's what it's all about. You know, it does make you think, like, how bad it sucks to not be able to run if you're a runner. So don't let knee pain slow you down. Let New Knee get you back out there without knee pain. Check it out at New Knee Shop. That's NUNEEshop.com. And use the code MTA20 for 20% off. That's NUNEEshop.com. Use the code MTA20. And something that would probably, like, compound the pain of failure or anything is comparing yourself to others, that comparison trap. So there's a great chapter in the book where you talk about comparison.
Yeah, I was actually kind of laughing at myself when I was writing this chapter because, and this is true for many of the things I wrote about, like these were all things that were really difficult for me to understand and to move on to. So the comparison thing, that was, I grew up in the middle of 5 kids, and it was all about comparison, you know, like I was typical middle child syndrome where you're trying to make yourself stick out by being different than your siblings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So competition was, I think people would describe me as a competitive person, you know, but I had to kind of come to the point in my career where I was able to develop a healthier way to compete. And so I just found it like really kind of comical that I would be the one saying like we shouldn't compete in the traditional sense. If you define competition as like you against someone else, you compared to even the best version of yourself previously, if that's your definition of competition, I've experienced that to just not be very satisfying at all. So I had to kind of shift my mindset. And you know, we were talking about briefly about the African mentality, and I think they're also very good at this. It, like they have this saying, I wish I could remember it. It's in Swahili, and it's like the saying amongst the elite athletes that they say to each other all the time, like, we're all in this together is the translation. And I just found that to be like such a fun way to compete, you know? So like I wrote about, you know, ran 204 at Boston, finished fourth, ran the fourth fastest time in 120 years at the Boston Marathon, yet didn't win the race, you know?
Yeah.
But I felt like I'd won the race because I had that shift in my mentality to where it wasn't about like me beating other people. It was about me maximizing my own potential. It was about personal excellence more than it was how do I stack up relative to everyone else. And so I was able to come across the finish line in fourth place, not winning, but stoked as if I had won the race. So that's just kind of the difference between the two, you know, like it's, there's lots of other runners that like I sat next to in award ceremonies, and they would finish like second or third in the Boston Marathon, and they're like, I would feel like just breaking this trophy, you know, like so discontent. And yet, like, what an amazing thing that they achieved, but they missed it because it was about how do they compare to someone else. And so I don't want to miss it anymore, you know, like, and so that's kind of why I changed my definition, because I want to be able to experience like
the only thing I can control on the starting line, you know, we talked about goals of the heart. The other thing is you can always get 100% out of what you have on the day. That's the only thing you can guarantee, you know, like no matter how training's gone or how you're feeling, like the only thing you have control over is maximizing what you have on the day. So when I had that mentality, that really helped me to accomplish that goal. Whereas if I'm out there competing and I'm like, well, I'm running this slow compared to how fast I was running 2 years ago at the Boston Marathon, and getting all bummed out because, you know, the competition thing's not working out for me.
So let's talk about pain and dealing with pain, and how does that relate to goals of the heart?
Yeah, this was also a fun chapter for me to write about, because I often describe to people like what it's like to be a professional marathon runner. It's, I think, a proper job description is pain management. that should be the real name of the job, because it really feels like that. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'd be 20, 23 miles deep into a marathon and be thinking like, there's got to be an easier way to make a living than this, you know, like it was just a ton of pain that you're having to manage and push through and not succumb to, you know. So learning to manage that pain was a long process for me. And I learned, you know, there's lots of different ways you can go about doing it. But as I mentioned previously, like I kind of looked at Jesus as the best example of how to handle pain. When you think about the immense amount of pain that he went through on the cross, I can't help but wonder, like, how could he go through that willingly? Like, say he wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I go back to the Bible and talks about he endured the cross for the joy set before him. I found that to be such an interesting passage, because I think it kind of unlocks like how Jesus was able to manage so much pain. It was for the joy of accomplishing the goal. And so I try to have that same mindset when I'm doing my races, is what is the joy before me? What am I fixated on? And so in the book, I talk about how, you know, Jesus's goal was us. And so like maybe like for myself, I like to envision people that I love, Sarah, my family, my friends. I'd often do this actually where I'd be in the lead group and we have someone on a motorcycle in front of us and they're filming us, and I just look into the camera and I just think about like all my friends back home, mm-hmm. all my family that was watching and how much they loved me and how much I loved them and how much they supported me and how grateful I was for them. Just trying to cultivate like love in my spirit. So I found love to be, you know, this is going to sound like kind of corny, but I think love is a much more powerful way to get through pain than fear of failure is. Mm-hmm. And I've competed with both of them, you know, where you're just afraid of making a mistake. And I've just found it to be a lot more powerful to compete out of love. I love the experiment where if you put your arm out and then someone tells you, think about like someone or something that you hate, and they push your arm down to see how strong it is. And then you do the same exact thing, but they tell you to think about someone you love, and you can resist quite a bit more, you know? And I think that's just like one of those principles that is just true of like how humans are created. Like, we're created to love, and we're created to function at our best when we're loving other people. So I tried to pull that into my competitions, like learning to love other people, even my competitors that I would be around. Because I really, really do believe that love is the most powerful thing we can compete out of.
It is amazing how that arm thing works. I've tried it.
Well, even the research that says that, you know, if you smile, that it lightens the amount of pain or the amount of suffering that you're in. So, you know, I've heard the advice to smile while you run because it, you know, psychologically helps your body endure more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny how like some people's grimaces actually, like pro runners, their grimace almost looks like a smile. So maybe that's their tactic with that.
If you're going to have a frozen face, it might as well be in a smile.
So I think I read in the book that your favorite movie is Chariots of Fire.
Yeah, that was, it took a while to become my favorite, to be honest. Like, I remember when I first got into the sport, my dad's like, you got to watch this movie, like, it's the best. And then I tried to watch it like 10 times, and like every time I fell asleep during the movie. But I think I was just like too young for it, you know? It's not the most like action-packed movie that could hold the attention of young kids, but super, super powerful. And one that I would watch pretty frequently before races.
So I'm wondering, who are some of the runners that you looked up to or still look up to and kind of studied and mentored you in the sport?
Yeah, you know, I wrote a little bit about kind of my interactions with Jim Ryan, and he was definitely, especially when I was getting into the sport, especially in high school, just like a hero that I looked up to, you know, not only for what he accomplished on the track, but also for like his deep faith and how he handled the gigantic disappointment of Munich. Just like really, really touched and inspired me. And then I had the opportunity to go to his running camp during, I guess it was between my sophomore and junior year in high school, and just like felt like I was embraced as like a son in their family, and actually became really good friends with Jim Ryan's son, Drew Ryan. And he came and lived with us even for a period during my senior year in high school, because he was trying to make it as a pro runner and kind of giving it one last good push and training in altitude. So, and he was the one who introduced me to Sarah. He introduced me to the coach at Stanford. So he's like one of those people who, you know, just briefly lived with me, but really like kind of, you know, shaped the trajectory of my life in terms of who he introduced me to. So, it was a kind of a fun little connection with Jim and his family. And I still know them and friends with them, and they still have their running camps going. And so he was definitely, I'd say, kind of my biggest hero. But I did make the mistake, you know, we were talking about comparison earlier, when I was in high school, of being like, I need to progress exactly the same as Jim Ryan progressed. So I wanted to run the same time he did when he was a sophomore in high school, the same time he ran as a junior, senior, et cetera, you know, like all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that. And when I couldn't do that, it made me feel like I was failing, or like I was, you know, like it was never going to happen. But looking back on it in hindsight, I'm like, man, it's so dangerous to compare yourself, because you could have very easily given up, being like, oh, well, I'll never be like Jim. Like, I've been running for 4 years and I haven't hit any of the times he's been running. But really, like, I just needed to not compare myself and allow my body to progress in its own way. It's just really easy, at least for myself, to get sidetracked with comparing my journey to someone else's and being disappointed. I think it's really easy to do this today with social media. Even like you go through Instagram, it's everyone's highlight reel, and you pretty soon you start feeling like, oh man, my life's like not that exciting, you know.
I never compare myself with people on Instagram.
You don't, huh? Yeah, because it's like we're comparing our, you know, kind of the messiness of our internal struggles with what people are portraying to the world, and it's just
their best side,
their best self. Yeah, usually with a filter on or something. So it's never a good comparison.
People probably look at elite runners, you know, like you and like Sarah, and they probably think, and that's the life. All they have to do is just run all day, and they get paid to fly around the world and make appearances.
And they don't see the behind the scenes.
Yeah, what is it really like?
Yeah, no. It's obviously a lot less glamorous than that. Like, I remember feeling like I knew I was in good shape when I was just like ridiculously bored with life. So I need to be buried up in the mountains at some remote location training, and literally you're just like eating, sleeping, running, and like doing other things you enjoy doing, but they all have to be like low key off your legs things, you know, like reading or writing or socializing with friends, you know. Like, it is a good life for sure. Like, I feel super blessed. Like, I never felt like I was working an actual job when I was a pro runner, but there is definitely some monotony there that could be a little bit trying mentally at times, where it's like, man, there's got to be more to life than this. But that's part of the cost of trying to maximize your potential. You know, there's always sacrifices involved, and it's not all fun and games the whole time. You know, like there's your day that they're just kind of hard to get through sometimes.
One of the things you wrote about in the book was that, you know, there's a big pressure, of course, for elite runners to be as light as you can. And I think you said you were down to 129, you know, for a 5'10" frame. You know, that seems like there's some strength trade-offs there. You talk a little bit about, you know, how body image and how that's a struggle for, you know, trying to get the most out of yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I could talk for a long time on the subject, because I think it was like one of the big mistakes I made in my career was kind of buying into the lie that fast, you know, lighter is faster. You know, I think the thing with most lies is there's a lot of truth in there as well, but when you take it to an extreme, then it becomes unhealthy, you know? So it definitely helps to like not be carrying around extra fat on your body, but you also need like a certain amount of fat to like be healthy hormonally, to be able, even mentally, you know, like there's a healthy level, and I definitely at times drifted outside of that healthy level. And I wish that in hindsight, I would have just always kept it at the same exact race weight that I was performing the best at. Yeah, it was just very easy to be like, well, if I was just like one or two more pounds lighter, I bet that I'd run faster. And you'd also, like, I would get confidence from it too. You know, it's like, oh, I'm lighter than I've ever been. I'm going to run faster than I've ever had. But it was actually the complete opposite for me. Like, I ran my worst races when I was my lightest, but I always raced my best when, you know, I was like 137. So I wish that I would have just stuck with that. And then a lot of that does go back to comparison. You know, it's like you look on the starting line running against a bunch of guys who are 5'4" and 110 pounds, 120 pounds. And you start, like, people, whenever they'd see me, they'd be like, whoa, you're not that big. Because, like, compared to, like, all the African guys, like, I look like, yeah, like I'm a Jolly Green Giant or something like that. But they're just, like, tiny, you
right.
know? So it was difficult to, like, not, like, let that rattle me and not compare myself to them and to not think that I needed to be as skinny and lean as them. So, you know, in hindsight, I wish I would have not allowed myself to get as light as I did. And I think that explained a lot about, you know, why I was so fatigued the final years of my career. I think a lot of that was just because I was really depleted and not nourishing my body well and just at a level of lightness that wasn't healthy for me.
And since you've retired, you've taken up weightlifting and, you know, kind of really transformed your body in a different direction.
Yeah, it's been super fun. And it's also kind of funny that I got into weightlifting because I used to hate lifting weights when I was running. So I still did it. Like I would lift legs twice a week and then I'd do some core. But I didn't like the weight room. I just tried to get through it as quick as I could, you know. And then I retired from running, and, you know, when I finished running, I felt like my body was telling me, it gave me everything it could possibly give me for 20 years of running. I needed to do something to give back to it. And so kind of the exact opposite of running, which is so catabolic, it just strips you of everything you don't need to run, essentially, you know, especially at the level that we're training at. And so I felt like the right move was for me to get into weightlifting, which is such an anabolic activity. And it was embarrassing to get into it, to be honest. I remember walking around the gym, just head down, trying not to make eye contact, trying not to allow people to see how little I was lifting. You know, like I was just super, super weak, having never done upper body weights, essentially. And I had nowhere to go but up, though. So it was really fun to see the progress and see my body change and adapt and grow and get stronger. Because, you know, I was trying to do that in running for the last 4 years, but things were just progressively worse and worse.
So I guess one final question that we have for you, Ryan. People out there who are listening to this and maybe they're just not happy with their running because things are not working out anymore. They're not as fast as they used to be. Maybe they're older now. What can we tell those people?
Yeah, just say to get in touch with your heart, you know? And
yeah,
like, because I think, you know, for me, running it stopped being fun when I stopped making progress. And so then I knew I had to find something else that I enjoyed physically that I could make progress in, you know? And so I imagine, like, if I get to the point with weightlifting where I stop getting stronger, which will certainly happen at some point, that I need to find another healthy physical thing that I can do to meet that need that I have to push myself and to see growth in an area of my life. And so that just comes back, like, me, like, knowing myself and knowing who I am and what, why I'm doing the sport that I'm choosing to do. So yeah, just encourage people, like, just get in touch with your heart and be okay with change.
Right on. All right. So guys, definitely check out Run the Mile You're In. It's a great read. It's due out in April. And Ryan, it was an honor to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ryan Hall. Definitely check out the book, Run the Mile You're In. It is a quick read. Ryan just, he's really good on a lot of, you know, mindset stuff and addressing, you know, stuff you don't really hear about in a lot of running books, like issues of the heart, you know, attitude and how important that is when you're out there.
That's right. There's a very big spiritual component to running. Running helps us connect with nature, with our thoughts, and it can really be a great source of inspiration and stress relief in our life. And yeah, Ryan really goes into some great thoughts in his book.
And of course, if you want to see links, we got the links over on our website. We got links, right, Angie?
I hope so.
Okay, well, we still want to talk to you guys about chafing. If you've never chafed, just wait till it happens. You will appreciate this. This quick tip. But before we do that, we'd like to say a quick word of thanks to our episode sponsor, MetPro. We love these guys. We've been working with one of their nutrition coaches, and we've seen amazing results. Just because you run a lot doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to keep the weight off. And what's tricky about the metabolism is it just gets used to whatever you're doing, and pretty soon your body starts storing fat. So what MetPro does is help you with metabolic profiling, hence the name MetPro. First, they get a baseline and see exactly where your body is and how it's responding against a very specific set of variables. And then their experts are trained to take those results and translate them into simple, actionable steps to adjust your macronutrients, to up-adjust or down-adjust, so that your metabolism starts burning fat again like a, you know, a little internal furnace.
Yeah, I've shared about how I went through a period of about 3 years where my hormones were out of whack and I gained 30 pounds and was unable to get rid of it despite training for marathons and eating healthy. So it's been awesome to finally see my metabolism working like it should again. I've lost 22 pounds, and even better than a number on a scale, because that's only one part of the equation, is that, you know, I'm feeling like myself again and can fit into my skinny jeans. And it makes running so much easier. Obviously, when you're carrying less weight around, I was telling you, Trevor, that my shoes are even fitting differently.
Yeah.
So we can spend many hours per week training, but when it comes to nutrition, if you don't have that dialed in, it can really decrease the results that you're getting. And with MetPro, you're really arming yourself with the tools to feed yourself as an athlete for the rest of your life.
So just visit metpro.co, that's a .co, not a .com, /MTA. MetPro.co/MTA to check it out and get started today. And we'd also like to thank Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode.
It only takes 30 seconds to give you a comprehensive nutritional insurance, and it actually tastes great, unlike a lot of other green drinks out there. I've tried many of them. Athletic Greens is the best of the best in all-in-one whole food supplements, and it's an easy way to build a healthy habit each and every morning. It was developed over 10 years by doctors, nutritionists, and naturopaths, and it's the most complete whole food supplement available with 75 whole food sourced ingredients. As a result, it helps to fuel energy, boost immunity, support digestion and gut health, manage stress, and support healthy aging.
And here's the deal for all you guys. You can get 20 free travel packs, which are valued at $79, along with your first purchase of Athletic Greens. Just head over to athleticgreens.com/MTA to claim your special offer. That's athleticgreens.com/MTA. All right. So, Angie, let's talk about the dreaded chafing problem that we runners experience if we're not careful.
Yeah, that's right. This quick tip is based on an email that we got. And really, I feel like we need to do this as a public service just to our audience, like a couple times a year.
Yeah, I was going to say at least once a year.
Because it seems like, you know, now is the time when, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, it's starting to warm up. You know, people are going to be doing more races. There's going to be more sweat going on, the potential for chafing. And we want you, our wonderful audience, to avoid the pain if possible. This email from Heather, she says, since I started running half marathons, I tend to get chafing under my armpit from my bra. I'm a power lifter and my back is more muscular than most women. Do you have any suggestions on bras that don't chafe when I run long distance? By the end of my half marathon, it's unbearable. I can't imagine running a full marathon with all that chafing. Body Glide does not help with this particular area. Please help.
She sounds desperate.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you got rubbed raw during every long run or race, you do get pretty desperate after a while.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Heather, that I totally feel your pain. My skin tends to chafe really easily too. I think some people have a tendency to get chafing worse than others because some people never seem to get it. I tend to get it under my arms and along my back bra line. In fact, Trevor, you can attest I have like this
permanent scar
on my back bra line. And most products, you know, like Body Glide, really does nothing for me. I can slather myself down and still get it. So yeah, like part of the equation for women is finding the right sports bra. And my favorite long run and marathon bra is the Champion Marathon Sports Bra. And it's not very pricey and it performs better than a lot of them in terms of reducing chafing. However, obviously, I realize it's not going to work for everyone. Some people need more support. So when it comes to finding that right sports bra, it's really a matter of trial and error. And the same can be true for finding the right chafing product as well. I know there's a lot of people who use petroleum jelly, you know, just something really simple. Obviously, there's a lot of fans of Body Glide out there.
Squirrel nut butter.
Squirrel's nut butter, yeah. There's some really creative ones. And I have tried a lot of them. Sometimes more than one at once.
Trail Toes is another.
Yeah, I like Trail Toes because it's a lot thicker and I kind of glob it on my problem areas. Another strategy is some people will apply the anti-chafing ointment, whatever they use, to their clothing, like that's going to be in contact with the skin. So that might be something that you want to try, Heather.
So both the skin and the clothes get it.
Exactly. It's kind of like a double layer. Another thing that a lot of people have recommended is using KT tape on the skin in the areas you get chafing. That just provides a barrier. So you slap the KT tape down and it should, you know, break up that skin to skin or skin to clothing rubbing that's going on. So that might be another thing that you want to try. Really, I mean, I think the best strategy is, you know, once you've found a product that you like, is to always lay out your anti-chafing ointment with your running clothes or with your race clothes so that you do not forget to apply it. During the Juno Marathon this past summer, I totally spaced putting anti-chafing ointment on. You'd think after 50 plus marathons, I would remember it, you know, and having scars on my back. But I got the most hellacious chafing under one arm. I think you took a picture, Trevor.
Yeah, still on Instagram.
It was very, very angry. And I had like, you know, during the race, I was feeling it, but they didn't really have any aid stations that were giving out medical supplies. So by mile 20, I'm like running with my arms held away from my body, looking like a chicken, you know, like my wings out.
It was on both sides?
It was one side in particular. The other side wasn't quite as bad.
Man.
So yeah, you know, it was just a bonehead thing that I did. So from now on, it's like that always gets laid out with my running clothes. So I don't forget to put it on. And
so if you do bonehead things, though, as a runner, you are probably in good company because we've all been there, done that, right, Angie?
Oh, yeah. In fact, you asked in our private Facebook group about people's experiences with chafing.
Why don't you read a few of those for us real quick, Angie? So here's what I said. Worst chafing you've ever had. Tell us about it.
Crema says, Boston 2018. I thought I'd covered myself with enough Glide, but the weather disagreed. Showering was almost as painful as the marathon. I had to wrap my thighs with Neosporin and gauze for a week.
Ooh.
There's still some slight discoloration.
Oh,
hey,
man.
You asked. Eli says, one time I forgot to bring nipple covers when I was out of town. It almost brought me to tears. Now I have them stashed everywhere just in case. So nip guards for the guys.
For some reason, I've never had a problem chafing there.
Wow. Well, that's good.
I've had other problems.
Yes, you have. Carolyn said, as a new runner, before I knew about any lubricating strategies, after running my first ever 10K, I noticed a little chafing, but didn't think much of it. Then I took a shower. You can probably figure out the rest. Now I keep at least a jar of Vaseline in my home and running bag at all times. Gregory says, before I met the glorious Body Glide, I had done my first half in all new clothes and virtually untrained. My nipples bled through my shirt, and I had scars between my legs that were as long as my palm. I couldn't walk right for over a week.
That's before he joined the academy and learned not to do any of those things.
Yes, you only do that once. Tina says, I never used Body Glide before, never needed it. Then I had an 11-mile run that I had to do on a treadmill because it was hailing outside. I got on the old mill, an episode of Game of Thrones, and 11 miles later, my butt crack was chafed so bad it hurt to sit. It hurt to walk. It hurt to go. You know, it was raw. Terrible, terrible 48 hours. Now I have two Body Glides, one for my butt and one for everywhere else.
Oh, we're going everywhere with this podcast episode.
Hopefully people are not eating while they're listening to this. Mike says, I did a 10K in the rain about 8 years ago in a cheap white shirt. I hadn't discovered Body Glide yet. I wondered why people were looking at me and wincing as I finished, and then realized my white shirt now had red and white stripes in the front. Kids said they heard my screams when I got in the shower. The next day, I bought my first ever Body Glide. Brian says, nip guards and Vaseline are a must now on any run nearing 2 hours or longer. One time, I didn't know I chafed until I hit the showers. I'd never experienced such piercing pain in my life. What was left were red areas, I'll leave unsaid, that no hair ceased to exist.
Well, all of this is just painful even to think about, you know? I really didn't think that the response would be so overwhelming, but everyone's got a chafing story. No. That's how ubiquitous this problem is. So, Angie, it sounds like keep trying products until you find the one that works for you. Maybe put it on your clothes as well as your skin. Put it with your gear to trigger, whatever it takes for you to remember to put it on before you go out and run.
And if you've tried a bunch of different products and you're still getting chafing, try KT tape, putting that on your skin as a barrier before you run and to see if that helps. So,
is that what you do now on your back?
When I remember. I ran 18 yesterday, and it was one of those things. I had put goop on my bra line, didn't feel anything during my run, got in the shower and there's a red spot back there. So
that's usually how it is. Sometimes you don't feel it till you get in the shower.
Exactly. So before my 20 miler this week, I'm going to do the KT tape and not be an idiot.
Well said, Angie.
What about you? Have you ever, I'm guessing your bra line is not your chafing spot, but.
No, I do okay right there.
Good.
So you're asking if I've ever experienced chafing?
Yes. I think I know the answer.
I remember I was a new runner and I came back with a rash between my thighs. I'm like, look at this, Angie. You're a nurse. Look at this. And you're like, that's chafing. What? First time I'd heard about it, but I guess it was my first time experiencing it. So then I took the whole Body Glide thing seriously. But I think for a guy, the worst place I've ever experienced getting chafing is in a certain place. This is a Ryan Hall episode, so we can quote the Bible, maybe. I think it's called in the Bible, the privy member.
In the groin region, we'll just say.
Yeah. I remember running on the treadmill, and any kind of movement, is I'm just rubbed raw, it's bad. So no one was home, so I just, took my shorts off and ran naked to finish.
I hope you closed the window. I did.
It hurt too bad. So, yeah, you don't want to chafe down there, and it's easy. I mean, there must be, the old Paul Simon song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. I think there must be 50 ways to chafe your Johnson. Cautionary tale for you guys out there.
Went for a long run on a hot and sweaty day. I felt some rubbing down below, and at first it was okay. But as the miles went by, my little man was feeling sore. There must be 50 ways to chafe your Johnson. As I was running, I was sweating like a pig. The protest from my manly member was not something I could dig. But I proceeded and kept running just as fast as I could go. There must be 50 ways to chafe your Johnson. 50 ways to chafe your Johnson. Just run in the heat, Pete. Forget to use lube, Rube. Be a tough man, Stan. Then do it again. Ignore your nads, Chad.
Yeah, it's gonna burn bad. Let it rub your main vein, Shane. Then you'll be in pain. Just wear the wrong shorts, sport. Forget the Vaseline, Gene. Don't oil your crank, Frank. Yeah, it's gonna show. Let it bounce real bad, Brad. Worst thing that you've had. Let it swing real low, Joe. You're gonna run slow.
All right, but you guys didn't know I'd throw that in there, huh?
You never know what you're gonna get on an episode.
That's right. And of course, that song is by Resurrected Runner, who makes good parody songs. So yeah, thank you, Resurrected Runner, for that. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks again to Athletic Greens. With 75 whole food sourced ingredients, Athletic Greens is the best all-in-one whole food supplement. Go to athleticgreens.com/MTA to claim your special offer.
And thanks again to MetPro, a world-renowned concierge nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle coaching company. MetPro's team of experts specialize in developing customized nutrition and training programs. Using metabolic profiling, MetPro analyzes your metabolism and provides you with an individualized strategy to obtain your goals. Just visit metpro.co/MTA to get started today. That's metpro.co/MTA.
And you can find links to everything that was mentioned over on our website, as well as send us a message if you want to ask us a question or send us in a suggestion for the podcast. We have a contact form over there, marathontrainingacademy.com. You guys are awesome. Thanks for listening to the MTA podcast. Hard to believe that the year is already one quarter over. I hope you are well on your way to accomplishing your running goals. Let us know how we can be a help. That's why we're here. Until next time, remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Just tear out your snake, Jake. It's gonna look red, Fred. Don't let it get hot, Scott. You're on the right track. Take care of your knob, Rob. It's rough as a corn cob. Put lotion on your sack, Jack. Yeah, it'll bounce back. Just take some Aleve, Steve. No, it's not a toy, Roy. It's an open sore, Thor. It'll heal, you'll see. Medicate your stick, Rick. It needs some relief, quick. Rest your wee-wee-lee. Come running with me.